Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Welcome back to another episode of Talking Eds, presented by students of International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, Cohort 2. I'm Aibanu from Xinjiang, China, your host for the day. Today our topic is English language teaching. I hope you will enjoy your listening with us. Here we have Yumi, also from China.
Hello everyone, this is Yumi from China.
And Amelia from Canada.
Hello everybody.
English teaching is now becoming a widespread and lucrative practice around the world. Like everything else, it brings both positive and negative sides along the way. From the positive perspective, mastering the language means entering the larger domain of knowledge. Specifically, as most of the important books of science, technology, and other academic fields are written in English, English speakers can enrich and contribute their own knowledge. Besides, fluent English speakers have easy access to international job market. Local and international job markets look for people with sound working knowledge of English. English is the language of information technology, tourism and travel, international relations, and telecommunications. As a result, opportunity awaits those who are competent in English. From the negative side, the spread of English is often considered as a threat to indigenous knowledge. What Gilbert Unser, a Ghanaian social linguist, says in this regard is worth quoting. Linguistic imperialism has a subtle way of warping the minds, attitudes, and aspiration of even the most noble in a society and of preventing him from appreciating and realizing the full potentialities of the indigenous language. Furthermore, the practice of language teaching is becoming a large business chain in most developing countries. There are 50,000 English training companies in China alone, according to the Ministry of Education, which estimated market value of $5 billion. When the act of acquiring knowledge mixed with economic profit, it loses the pure academic purpose.
There is no doubt that English has been increasingly used nowadays, and it's not exaggerated at all to name it as a universal language. For example, the language that I'm choosing to speak right now is English, although I can obviously speak Mandarin much better. We choose English as the language of our radio program so that more people can participate in making it and listening to it as well. Not only in our radio programs, but also in other fields such as internet, business world, and diplomacy, English has been used everywhere. As far as I know, there are actually more people speaking Chinese and Spanish in the world compared to English, but more Chinese speakers and Spanish speakers are also learning English compared to English speakers who are learning other languages. So I'm wondering why English is the language that becomes so popular rather than any other language.
Based on my personal experience of learning both Chinese and English, I think one reason is that English is relatively easier to study than Chinese. It can be extremely hard for people to learn Chinese if you do not understand the related cultural background. Of course, it is the same for Chinese speakers to learn English. But as you mentioned just now, since English is becoming so widespread in all different fields, there are more opportunities for people to access English.
Yes, and since it's already an existing phenomenon that English has been used internationally in culture and economy, it attracts more people to learn and use this language if they want to be part of the international world. However, there are also a big amount of people who learn English only out of their personal interest. For example, as a native English speaker, I'd love to learn more languages because I feel learning a new language will offer me a new perspective to view the world. There are, of course, many other reasons to learn a new language. I found a few points insightful from a TED Talk of a linguist named John McWhorter as follows.
To go into a culture and to only ever process people through that kind of screen curtain is to never truly get the culture. And so to the extent that hundreds of languages will be left, one reason to learn them is because they are tickets to being able to participate in the culture of the people who speak them, just by virtue of the fact that it is their code. So that's one reason. Second reason, it's been shown that if you speak two languages, dementia is less likely to set in, and that you are probably a better multitasker. And these are factors that set in early, and so that ought to give you some sense of when to give junior or juniorette lessons in another language. Bilingualism is healthy. And then, third, languages are just an awful lot of fun. Much more fun than we're often told.
Learning process probably would be more interesting if all learners can learn a new language due to such reasons. But I think for the majority, they probably will learn a new language for more practical uses. I used to work in a big Chinese education organization named the New Oriental for 2 years, and I was teaching English to different age groups ranging from 13 to 30. Almost all my students were taking extra English classes to pass certain exams, such as Chinese University Entrance Examination, or IELTS, or TOEFL, and etc.
It is a very common situation for students to take extra classes in China, since English has been attached great importance in educational system. English is regarded as equally important as Chinese and mathematics, starting from 9-year compulsory education to higher education. For adults, basic English is a compulsory course in higher education institutions. For students who want to apply for a master's course, they have to pass an English test before. And for students who want to go abroad to study, they also need to take certain tests like IELTS or TOEFL first.
That's why there are more and more education organizations providing examination-oriented courses for students. It has been debated for a long time whether such classes that focusing on testing skills rather than the essence of knowledge are beneficial or detrimental to students. But since this is what has been demanded from extracurricular class, this is what those organizations are offering right now. It is actually becoming a large industry chain now. Big educational companies not only offer lectures or materials, but also developing high-tech educational patterns, such as mainly online educational platforms, to help students to study, and which is definitely a benefit for students who has time and location limits.
So besides the role in education, those educational companies must have contributed massively in the economy as well, as they've developed on such a big scale. If it already created an industry chain, it must have involved a big amount of human resources and offered many job opportunities in the labor market.
That's true. The biggest difference between such educational enterprise and traditional educational institutions is their attitudes towards profit. Institutions will always focus more on academic research rather than economic profit, while educational companies work more in a business way. Basically, they sell education for money. Of course, it sounds more noble if we relate education more with humanity and academic world. So institutions would always somehow look down upon those companies in a subtle way. But we cannot deny that any field which involves people, resources, and money would impact the economic world. So it can be seen as a kind of development when education is connected with business because it works in a more practical way.
Now, Ibanu, a few minutes ago you mentioned that English is attached with equal importance as Chinese from primary education to higher education, which I find really interesting. In Canada, we also learn French as a second language, but depending on the province you live in or the school you go to, it might not be highly emphasized. Can you tell me a bit more about the situation in China?
Sure. The importance of English learning is directly related to the educational policy. From primary school to high school, English is a compulsory subject, and the importance of English culminates in the college entrance exam. the National College Entrance Exam is essentially the equivalent of SATs and is considered as life-changing exam for Chinese youth and taken very seriously by the whole society. So students start to prepare for the national exams early on. The final year of high school is like a year-long session with non-stop studying going on. From daily classes, which often go into the evening hours, to weekends, tutorial sessions, or additional private classes. It is an all-out effort towards the national exams. In addition, teachers and parents also try their best to create an environment where students can fully concentrate on their study. The public also shows great support to facilitate the process. Typical cases are that during these 2 days of the exam, police cars are assigned to pick up students who live far away from examination venue if necessary. Besides, drivers are restricted to blow their horns in the nearby area to avoid disturbing the examinees.
Wow, that's really taken seriously, and it's quite different from my experience taking exams in Canada, where it's not nearly as serious. So what about the exam itself? What subjects would be included?
The test is divided into four sections, with Chinese, math, and a foreign language, usually English, universally tested. Each of these sections can have a maximum score of 150 points. The fourth section is chosen by the student, depending on their interest and which college major they are pursuing. They will either take a comprehensive liberal arts test or a comprehensive science test. The liberal arts test includes politics, history, and geography, while the science test includes physics, chemistry, and biology. Each subject has a maximum score of 100. But the exam itself is receiving some criticism, so reforms to the examination system has been carried out in the last few years. The English language assessment system is the major focus of the change. According to the timetable of Beijing's education system reform plan, from 2016, the scores of English in Beijing college entrance examination will be reduced to 100 points from the previous 115 points. Of the 100, the scores for listening ability will increase to 30 points. And for Chinese, the total score will increase from 150 points to 180 points.
Yeah, according to one member of Beijing Municipal Commission of Education, the change highlights the fundamental importance of mother tongue in the curriculum. The general public are dissatisfied with a school system that gives emphasis to English over Chinese, and the change means students devoting more time and effort to learn Chinese culture and legacies. But reform plans that reduce the score for English does not mean lowering the importance of the language. Instead, it intends to highlight its practical application.
Off today's program by discussing the motives behind English language education and the increasingly commercialized business it has become. Now it's time to move into a discussion of who is teaching English and why. In fact, this is a fairly big debate in the field. Students, teachers, and language institutions all have different perspectives on whether English is best taught by native or non-native English speakers. So that is, by people whose language is English as a first language, or by somebody who learned English as a second or other language. And this has ramifications for job security, wage, and the perception of educators in language classes.
A big misconception in the field of English language teaching is that native speakers are always best equipped to teach a language. And this assumption has put native English speakers in a privileged position as teachers. They are preferred in the hiring process by students. But why? generally what happens is that native English speakers are perceived as being superior. Students assume that in order to speak English like a native speaker, they need to learn from one as well.
Yeah, and in terms of fluency, vocabulary, and especially conversation skills, native speakers are in high demand. And because English language teaching has been commercialized, as we discussed earlier, language institutions are more likely to hire native speakers because that is what students are willing to pay for, and to pay more for. This creates a cycle that builds this privileged position. Students perceive native speakers as being superior language teachers, institutions hire more native speakers and charge more for their classes to learn from them, and the image of native speaker is elevated, and the perception of them being a higher quality teacher gets reinforced. But we need to ask ourselves if native speakers are actually inherently better than non-native speakers as teachers.
One reason behind the preference for native speaker is that people see them as being able to provide a more immersive environment for language learning, somewhat similar to traveling to an English-speaking country. While many people do believe that the best way to learn a language is to completely immerse yourself in it, I'm skeptical that this can be achieved by simply having a native English speaker as a teacher. Think about this. You have language class once a week or even once a day, but the rest of the time you are conversing and continuing in your own language. Well, having a native speaking teacher could expose you to some of the elements of the immersive experience, such as incidental language, accents, slang, etc. There are other ways to integrate those into any classroom. Thinking about watching English movies, listening to radio, conversing online with native speakers.
Well, there is some strength to the preference of native speakers. They do have advantages. Native speakers tend to be preferred when teaching conversation, fluency, or accent acquisition because these are aspects of language that comes naturally to them. However, non-native speakers have advantages too. They are preferred to teaching grammars and vocabulary. Think about it. Would you prefer to learn vocabulary from a teacher who can speak your language? When it comes to explaining difficult concepts or for beginner students, especially young students, learning from a teacher who knows your language and English could be a huge advantage, and these teachers tend to be non-native English speakers.
The reality is that today there are tons of different forms of English. Even just think about the differences between my accent or a Maltese or an Irish accent. When you emphasize the importance of one native English accent, you're dismissing the diversity of the English language. In reality, an English language class should integrate multiple different Englishes into the curriculum to expose students to this diversity, whether the teacher is a native speaker or not. Personally, I've worked as an English language teacher, and especially when I was a new teacher, there were a lot of learning curves. As a native speaker, many of the English language skills I have, I did not overtly learn because I absorbed them naturally as a child. This means that when a student asks me what verb tense to use, I can probably figure out the answer, but I'm not going to know why. And this puts me in a position of learning with the students. Now, in a lot of situations, I would support a teaching stance that promotes learning with students. However, in these cases, I think it's served to slow my classes down. A non-native speaker teaching the same class would have learned English through grammar rules and would have a shared experience with the students. Firsthand, they would know what aspects of the language are especially difficult for students and may recall some of the strategies their teachers or peers used to overcome them. This is especially true when the teacher's first language is the same as the student's, as they will have a deeper understanding of the differences that are specific to the two languages.
The other thing we cannot ignore is this idea of an English language native speaker in general. What does that even mean? In general, it refers to anybody who speaks English as their first language. However, in practice, this is not necessarily the case. In a lot of language schools around the world, a native speaker is anybody who looks like a typical North American or European, namely a white teacher.
You're right, and even within this population, North American accents tend to be the most highly sought after and are right up there with a British accent. But we know very well that these groups are diverse and absolutely do not encompass all native English speakers or all English speakers in general. This is where a preference for native speakers gets very problematic. It's rooted in what are frankly discriminatory ideas of who is best suited to teach the English language.
A lot of what we have been talking about on this program has been about the negative sides of English language teaching today. The hiring process can be discriminatory or racist. Language teaching has moved from a student-centered education model to a business model. And as a result, many students are learning to pass an exam without actually absorbing any language skills. But it is also important to discuss models and methods of English teaching that are working and are positive.
Absolutely. Well, as we said earlier, English teaching methods can very easily fall into the territory of threatening local languages. They are methods of teaching a language that respect local culture. Teaching collaboratively and allowing students the opportunity to co-create a curriculum for a course ensures that the teacher's voice and perspective is not the only one being heard. Well, it is true that only English teaching can reflect largely Western Englishes. There could also be a strong local use of English, and using that local context in the classroom is a step towards including different perspectives.
I think the first step for an educator in an English classroom is to identify why they are teaching English and why the students are learning it. Are your students learning only to pass an examination without much concern for actually acquiring the language? Are you teaching because the pay is good or because you love the process of engaging with a language? There are many answers here, and we're not here to judge anybody's motivations. Just because your students are learning to a test doesn't mean that your teaching is contributing to these negative social processes. However, understanding these motivations is incredibly important.
I think it is also important for educators to look at their position in an institution. Are you teaching in a cultural context that is foreign to you? If so, why? What qualifies you to have that job? If your only qualification is the color of your skin or the accent you have, you may need to think twice about what message you are sending to your students. You also need to consider the power dynamics in the institution and in the classroom. Do people treat you with a higher level of respect because of your native tongue? If so, remember that this may make it less likely that your colleagues or students will feel comfortable coming to you with concerns or suggestions. Again, the first step here is to questioning your role within the classroom and the institution so that you can work from there.
Yes, and in addition to looking at your qualifications and your position, you should also check the materials you're using. Do they represent diverse perspectives? Are the materials all from Western countries and written in a Western cultural context, but being used elsewhere? Considering the implications of this, what does that say to a student about the use of English in their country? To what extent will they be able to connect to that material?
That's a really important point, Yumi, and I think the final one I want to add, and perhaps most importantly, is that you need to discuss these issues with your students. Respect their knowledge by inviting them into a conversation about why they are learning English and why the process of teaching English can be problematic at times. Inviting criticism onto your position and course will allow you to grow as an educator and will start to build critical thinking in your students. And if done correctly, you could also build a rapport and a community in your classroom.
On today's program, we have discussed a lot of challenges associated with English language teaching and some practice for educators to overcome a few of these difficulties. This discussion centered on traditional in-person classrooms. However, the reality is that a growing number of people are using technology to learn languages independently. We're going to finish off today's program listening again to linguist John McWhort, and invite you to consider what he's saying about learning and technology and how that intersects with some of the things we have discussed today.
We live in an era when it's never been easier to teach yourself another language. It used to be that you had to go to a classroom, and there would be some diligent teacher, some genius teacher in there, but that person was only in there at certain times, and you had to go then. And then was not most times. You had to go to class. If you didn't have that, you had something called a record. I cut my teeth on those. There was only ever so much data on a record or a cassette or even that antique object known as a CD. Other than that, you had books that didn't work. That's just the way it was. Today, you can lay down, lie on your living room floor, sipping bourbon, and teach yourself any language that you want to with wonderful sets such as Rosetta Stone. I highly recommend the lesser known Glossika as well. You can do it anytime. Therefore, you can do it more and better.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of Talking Ed. This is the end of our program for today. Goodbye and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.